Many moons ago, I was nominated by the successful entrepreneur Cheryl Nesbitt, who started Capsicum Cooking School, into a program called Endeavor. Without really knowing what it was, I quickly found out that Endeavor is one of the most respected and successful entrepreneur organizations in the world. I didn't make it very far in the program, but through their famed networking sessions, I engaged with Endeavor board members such as Archer and CEO Willem Roos, FirstRand co-founder Paul Harris, founder of Discovery Adrian Gore, and Robert Pillay, the former CEO of Gucci Global. The MD of Endeavor, South Africa, Catherine Townsend, has been at the helm of Endeavor for almost a decade. Endeavor companies are amongst the top 1% performing companies worldwide, and Catherine is privy to a stellar array of startup businesses and entrepreneurs such as Yoko's Katlego Mapai, SweepSouth, Aisha Pandor, and Intersect's Skulk Nolte. This is the Healthy Business Show. I'm your host, Fred Rode. And in this episode, I want to find out from Catherine some of the secret tips, techniques, and tactics deployed by these amazing startups and their founders. Catherine, welcome to the Healthy Business Show. I am a huge fan of Endeavor and the work that you guys have been doing. And I actually was very briefly part of your program, and it was early days of my old business, which I got stuck into some of the activities that your organization was overseeing, and I promptly dropped out because it was too hard. And I think the pressure on me and my lifestyle and my actual trajectory at that point was just not aligned to, I think, the sheer intensity of what Endeavor is all about. So with that context, let's talk about the origin story of Endeavor. Where did it start, and why did it start?
Thanks, Fred. It's great to be here, and really awesome to hear that you've been touched by Endeavor. I think that's one of Endeavor's ambitions globally, is to lead that high impact movement and to touch as many entrepreneurs as possible. If anything, the exposure changes your mindset, changes the way you think about what you can achieve, and really, I think, just highlights the importance of having great people around you that believe in you.
Sure. I mean, even though I dropped out, it still has one of the most impactive parts of my career was through Endeavor.
That's fantastic. And I hope that that story gets multiplied in Endeavor speak. Sure. But if I may, I'll just quickly jump into the background of Endeavor. Linda Rottenberg is one of the co-founders of Endeavor, and you may have heard of the book Crazy as a Compliment. And yes, she talks about the story, so forgive me if I don't have all the facts and details right at my fingertips, but I'll take a little bit of poetic license.
Sure.
But going back to kind of 97, Linda was in the back of a cab in South America. I think she was in Chile at the time, and she got chatting to the cab driver, and it turned out that he was a deeply skilled engineer, if I have it correct. And she'd said to him, well, why don't you become an entrepreneur? Why don't you build a great business? You've got a brilliant mind and you have a dream. And they talked about his dream on the trip. Clearly, the traffic was horrendous, so they had a lot of time to talk. And she was with Ashoka at the time.
Okay.
And I think she had that realization, which was, there's so many of these brilliant minds with these amazing ambitions, yet actually some of the biggest barriers are just knowing the right people. So access to the right type of talent and the right type of talent network. And then access to the right type of funding at the right time. And really just this access to this broader network of people that want to see you succeed, but not on a paid for basis.
Sure.
And so she literally left the country, went back to the US, and said, but hey guys, like we've been fortunate enough to have these amazing minds around us, great networks through some of the top business schools. Let's formalize a network called Endeavor, where we create access in a curated manner for many of these entrepreneurs. Not just an open gate. Let's put rigor in this, where we actually push people to think differently, make more informed decisions, and expose them to the right people in the right manner at the right time. And in doing that, really change the trajectory of their business. And so that's how Endeavor was born.
Catherine, just for context, just explain what Ashoka is.
So Ashoka essentially does a lot of work at the early stage or foundational elements of social entrepreneurship. A lot of the impact, or now as we know them, impact entrepreneurship movements are driven off the foundations that Ashoka lay many, many, many moons ago. I think this is late 80s, early 90s.
Gotcha. Linda Rottenberg was at Ashoka, and then she left Ashoka to found Endeavor.
And that's where I think you'll see in her book, she constantly talks about, you know, people saying she's absolutely crazy. Crazy to think you can start something that provides curated access to the right networks at the right time for entrepreneurs, that's going to create large-scale employment in emerging markets. That is crazy when you think about it now.
Sure. But it's a common thread though, right? And in retrospect, we're starting to see precedent across the world in all the hotspots, the entrepreneurial hotspots around the world, where a relatively small group of high impact individuals are making a disproportionate impact on society and the economy, right?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of these things are driven by softer issues, role modeling. And Endeavor, really, the whole model of Endeavor, what makes it so unique is it's of, by, and for entrepreneurs.
Sure.
So if you find the very best entrepreneurs in each of your own markets and you help and provide that support, that ethos of paying it forward or giving back is inherent in that entrepreneurial community. It's really the foundation upon you want every entrepreneurial community to be built.
And it's woven into, say, for example, Silicon Valley, right?
Correct.
And you start to see that paid forward and multi-generational baton passing that's occurred over the past 80 years within the San Francisco Valley area, right?
Absolutely. And I think in many respects, if you bring it back home, it's part of our culture in South Africa.
Yes.
It's deeply inherent in South African culture. We give back, or we pay it forward. We're always trying to find a way and means to give back in South Africa. Yes, of course, there's a varying degree of needs. But from the entrepreneurial community perspective, if you know an entrepreneur, inevitably they would have supported in some way, connected somebody, helped seed an idea. It's what happens when you meet great entrepreneurs.
Gotcha.
They're not all takers.
Certainly. And I mean, I felt that just through some of the interactions that I had with your board members and the mentors that are in the Endeavor network, that, I mean, I have some of my most salient lessons that I've learned. For example, Willem Rust, you know, the founder of Archer, and said a very simple thing. He said, you know, in terms of growing a business, it's really simple. Just have a unique offering and then advertise the hell out of it. And I never forgot that. It's such an amazingly simple way of looking at such a complex structure of business. Mm. So I suppose that impact is really profound when you have people who've really succeeded and shown that success, providing those lessons and that kind of mentorship. And Endeavor in South Africa, so how long has it been in South Africa for? And can you talk to some of the impact that it's had within the entrepreneurial sector?
Sure. I mean, Endeavor's been around, this is its 15th year, which is wonderful. By December this year, it'll be 15 years old. And if we were to count back how many entrepreneurs we touched, I would definitely quote the wrong number, but it's in the orders of about 8,000 or 9,000 entrepreneurs that we've engaged with.
Okay.
And on average, we're working we screen about 1,000 businesses a year.
Okay.
And of those, I'd say probably 500 spend about 5 months in mentorship with Endeavor.
Okay.
And then in terms of impact metrics, I think what's extraordinary is just by way of an example, is if I put the number 26 out there, there are 26 companies in the Endeavor portfolio right now that have created or currently employ about 7,500 people. And because of their growth, in the next year, we anticipate they're going to employ another 1,500 people. Just 26 businesses.
That's amazing.
Which is quite extraordinary in an environment which is under so much pressure.
Sure.
Economically. And that's really the premise upon which Endeavor's been built.
Mm.
So even though we're actively working with only such a few companies, we've touched 1,000 in a year. And we've been able to demonstrate that if you look at the growth rates of entrepreneurs, on average, the SME sector is growing at about between 12 and 14% year on year.
Sure.
Endeavor portfolio companies, so the 26 that I just mentioned, are growing on average at about 35% year on year.
Wow.
And just with mentorship over a 5-month period, we've been able to see that actually companies do grow faster. They grow probably close to 5 or 6 times faster than the SME average, which is already a significant difference.
That's incredible.
So I think the takeaway from there is, or from that message is, having good, high quality mentorship in a structured format
can make a difference. Are we going to see an index fund that tracks all the Endeavor companies at some point in the near future?
Yes, we can now see the funding model of Endeavor going forward. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm signing up right now.
Fantastic.
That's amazing. 35%. Yeah. So, I mean, if we look at the statistics of the South African context, I mean, it makes for some sobering reading. I mean, we look at, you know, just the youth unemployment sector and how dismal that is. I mean, you know, statistics vary, but it's sitting at about 60 and 80% unemployment. It's just nuts in terms of the guys just leaving school, coming into this environment, which is just not hiring. We've got a stagnant economy. And we're looking at this tiny little blip in the radar that is sitting at 35% growth year on year, and there's only 26 companies, right? So I guess maybe the $6 million question is, how then would we expand that to 260, to 2,600? How do we expand that success? And I mean, it's clearly not possible to have that high intensity impact on such a huge amount of companies. But is there a way of scaling it? Is there a way of scaling Endeavor?
Definitely. I think, you know, Endeavor operates within its own finite resources as a not-for-profit. So I think those are the two constants. If I think in what we've learned as a not-for-profit in South Africa is it's very, very difficult to operate in the SME landscape. The funding mechanisms, you've got a lot of pressure on donors. And just then, you know, just within those constraints, it's hard to scale the reach. But certainly, I think what we are seeing and what we have seen over the last 15 years in the South African economy is there's a huge amount of support organizations that have been launched. There's an organization by the name of ANDE, the Aspen Network for Development Entrepreneurs.
Okay.
They produce a landscape study every year, and where they look at the ecosystem. What's fantastic when you look at that map, and if you look at the contrast over the last 15 years, you would notice a stark difference, all in the area of business development support. So I think what we are seeing is, and largely I think as a result of, let's call them structural changes, so the BEE codes and the need to support black-owned business in South Africa has redirected spend into a lot of support organizations that are creating everything from early stage incubators through to then accelerators and then growth and support entities. And I think that talks to the life stages of businesses. But just a quick stat, I think there's 350 odd support providers in South Africa now, all focused on SME development.
Wow. Would I be correct in saying that it needs to have a little bit more cohesion, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody's trying to do the same thing and not really working together.
Yeah, I think there's always scope to do more collaboration. And I think if there was a way.
Well, let's put it this way. What's it like in other regions where Endeavor is prevalent? Is there more cohesion? Take Israel, for example, you know, South America.
I think certainly where you've got the natural progression where you're seeing early stage companies naturally being passed on from one support organization onto the other as the business's needs change. So almost if you could imagine the development of a human as they go through the schooling system,
sure.
You know, they get passed on from one academia support entity onto the next. The same in more mature ecosystems. I think where there's some complexity in the South African environment is largely driven by who funds the accelerator or the incubator, because they often set up to support a particular need versus supporting across the spectrum.
Sure.
And so I think that would be if we could re-engineer it, that would certainly be an element that I'd love to score us all on, is to say, you know, how much has Endeavor worked with X, Y, and Z? Organizations to support entrepreneurs. And if we could crudely tag an entrepreneur, that would be wonderful. So we could actually see its trajectory. And I think of a great example like Sweep South.
Yes.
Who have been on an amazing growth journey themselves, but started with the seed engine team and went through those early seed days. And then through onto 10X and related programs, and then Endeavor. That's sure. a wonderful.
And they've been through Silicon Valley correct. And the 500 startups, and they've really been through this journey. And yeah. Aisha is just an incredibly inspiring, high impact entrepreneur herself, right? And a role model, right? I mean, so Endeavor, it appears to be creating role models. And how important are role models to the SME sector and this entrepreneurial ecosystem that we're trying to foster in this country?
Fred, I think if there was a way for me to put an exclamation mark at the end of a sentence, I'd
clearly
probably
very important.
I'd put 10. Extremely important. We did some work with WITS last year where we published a report to highlight the importance of role models and talent. The study was actually to find and assess the ecosystem, particularly in Gauteng, in the software engineering environment. What was glaringly obvious in that study was you would see in Endeavor Speak big bubbles. So these are entrepreneurs that mentor, invest, and support other entrepreneurs in the ecosystem. So it's not necessarily a function of how big they are, but how much influence they have in the community. And what has happened over the last two decades is many of these very successful founders have actually exited and left South Africa. And as a consequence, you don't have that natural mentorship of players mentoring and supporting other entrepreneurs.
That multi-generational thing that you see happening in Israel and Silicon Valley and even now new hotspots like Estonia, right?
Yes. So I think when you go back to that element of role models, it's absolutely vital. Like all areas, I suppose, in the sporting environment, role models that have performed at the highest level, you want them to mentor and support others because they've done it.
Sure.
And I think in South Africa, we don't do enough in terms of providing access to those top role models. And
so it's more mentorship rather than role models. So it's really about spending time, being present, and providing, you know, the fruit of all your years of experience to assist, and not just in an investment perspective, but really just advice and course correcting those amazing, you know, little tidbits of lessons that they've already been through, right?
And I think a platform like this is a great example, because when you're talking about creating healthier businesses, it's really having access to that thought leadership, that knowledge.
Sure.
And so that's where the digital environment is so wonderful, is that you can tap into that podcast
and you can scale it,
and say, how did Fred build his business, or how did Willem build his business? And you can read that article. Sure, it's not going to be a cut and paste for your own business. But I think it's having access to that one moment where you're going to have that aha. And I think Carlo Gonzaga actually said it to me once when I said to him, how would you crystallize what Endeavor's done for you in building your business? And he said to me, Endeavor, really, the quicker they get me to that aha moment, the quicker I'm able to execute on it. I just need to get many aha moments. So I thought to myself, wow, well, I'm not quite sure I can solve that one, but it sounds like that's really what we do, is through creating access to those role models or those mentors, you really disseminating knowledge to help other entrepreneurs achieve that aha moment.
Sure. Carlo Gonzaga is the Taste Holdings CEO, right?
Or former.
That's right. So do you think that we are living, or we operate in South Africa in the for the SME context in a kind of a closed environment, so that we're not creating this cohesion whereby, you know, we're cross-pollinating skills and providing, you know, from a peer-to-peer perspective, the support that we need? Do you think we're competitive? I'm trying to identify the challenge that we're facing in the ecosystem that we have.
I don't think it can just be distilled into one point. I think the thing is that we want to see a result very quickly. So, I mean, just going back quickly, and you know, in our conversation, we've talked about over the last 15 years seeing 350 support organizations for SMEs. That's amazing. Now, we also need to recognize that businesses don't get born and become adult overnight. And that patience is not something that I think we're blessed with in South Africa. We're very impatient.
No entrepreneur ever has been blessed with patience, I suppose.
And venture cycles are 10 years for a reason.
And no investor ever, I suppose.
So I suppose that's something to always be cognizant of is if we're thinking about our ecosystem and the development of it, we also need to recognize that we want to see a lot of businesses moving from firstly that 1 to 3 year where we see a lot of failure rates.
Sure.
And the same in any economy. It's not unique to South Africa.
Sure.
Then that 3 to 6. That 3 to 6 year is a very, very tough period of in a business's life, just trying to actually augment the business model, get enough income in the door to pay salaries, let alone the founder's salary, and continually innovating, putting systems and processes in place so that they can actually do it on a consistent basis. And then that, you know, kind of 6 to 10 year period where now they're seeking, you know, sustainable funding, growing the team, penetrating other markets, etc. So I think if we can see more of that development in that segment of the economy, then we've done justice to our ecosystem.
Looking at what Endeavor provides, I mean, it's ostensibly it's support, it's the role models, it's the network, it's the I guess opening up of markets and connections within international markets. There's a huge amount of value that you guys provide to the entrepreneurs that successfully come through the program. If we and I mean the, you know, the success rate that you have within Endeavors in the top 1% of the sector, I mean, where do we start? Let's start with finance, for example. Where would you start in terms of just getting that of finance to fund the growth of a company?
Like all good ideas, they're probably not unique in the sense that they've probably been thought of by 1,000 other people. It comes down to execution. So the first part would be get onto the web and look up FinFind as an example, finfind.co.za, and I'm not punting them. It's just they're a great resource for anybody looking for funding. Mm. And I think the immediate response to listeners might be, well, you know, this is for every other entrepreneur that's got a business already. No, this is for anybody who's got a business that's less than R1 million in revenue.
Okay.
And it's quite simply put out. You're either less than R1 million or more than R1 million. And it goes through a set of Q&A with you online to then determine where you could get funding from.
Gotcha.
Based on your business needs, where you're on your life cycle, whether you've got collateral or not, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. So it's just a perfect guide to point you in the right direction.
Exactly. So I think just from a funding standpoint, that's a great place to start. And then recognize where you are in your life cycle. I think the natural tendency is that businesses are immediately leaping forward to say, I want to be like Company X. Well, the reality is, how old is Company X? How many businesses has Company X or the founders done in their prior lives as entrepreneurs? Because typically entrepreneurs that have very successful businesses, it may not be their first gig.
Sure.
They may have done 3 or 4 other gigs before that. So
some of which have failed and correct. Some of them have succeeded, right? But that experience is vital either way.
So the life stage of your business is critical. And then the next thing is find an incubator. So if you early stage, if you have an idea, there are a myriad of incubators. So where would you find those?
Sure.
I would suggest getting onto the ANDE website. So that's www.ande.co.za. They've done all the ecosystem mapping. You can look for an incubator. You can find a corporate incubator. Get into one of those programs.
Great, yeah.
Because that allows you to get access to the right type of mentor at the right stage. And I'm talking about ideation. Sure, there's things like Y Combinators, et cetera, abroad.
Sure.
But right here on our home soil, we've got access to those. If you're later stage, or you're now 3 or 5 years along, I would suggest thinking about an accelerator. Find an accelerator. Again, there's many of those in the market. Get into those programs. And if you don't get into the program, ask them for a warm referral. A warm referral does wonders because it gets you into the right people.
Sure.
And do your homework. Do your homework. Go there informed and know or at least have some idea of what you think you may need.
Mm.
Might not be the right answer, but that's okay. At least you understand what your needs are and have done your homework.
Sure, you're prepared.
And you're
sure.
prepared. Yeah, that would be my suggestion.
It's very clear that mentorship is a really important part of what Endeavor provides. And for the rest of us who don't have access to Adrian Gore and Willem Ruys and Paul Harris and so on, what advice would you give to a young entrepreneur who's trying to find that mentorship?
Mm.
Where would you find this this fabled person, this sage?
Yeah, I think all things, it's always about finding someone who's been on that path that might be 6 months or 2 years ahead of you, rather than somebody who's already 15 to 20 or 50 years ahead of you, because the market is moving so quickly. I mean, I'm talking specifically in the digital environment. Most businesses these days can be literally started from your laptop in a coffee shop. You know, you can download the Spotify application and start your business, you know, in an e-commerce format. So my sense is, if you want to find a mentor, it's first understanding who is extremely good at doing what you want to replicate. And then find out which organization they're associated with, because you'd be surprised how many entrepreneurs in this market are giving back. I think of YPOs, the EOs, yeah. An organization by the name of T, who's doing a lot of work in the informal economy. There's a myriad of support providers. It's just a case of actually doing your homework,
sure.
And you can find access to that mentor. I don't think that any one human has the silver bullet. I do think that firstly, understanding what market you're trying to penetrate, who your customer is, and then finding an entrepreneur who's done that before.
Sure. And I mean, I suppose networking is a big part of that as well, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, even we've seen at Heavy Chef at the events and the masterclasses that we ran that, I mean, business partnerships have started through the connections that have been made and the interactions that have happened at just organic meetings that have happened, and people have just found a shared purpose and common goals and I suppose diverse set of skills, so they complement each other, right? Quick question on that, by the way, how often do you see the partnerships and how important are partnerships within the success of these fast-growing companies?
Partnerships corporate-wise or public-private?
In the businesses that Endeavor really looks at.
So, I mean, in terms of collaboration across the businesses, it's quite an interesting phenomenon. We have in the Endeavor Network, we talk about Endeavor deals where a lot of the entrepreneurs reciprocate. They share their platforms with one another and on preferential rates, which is obviously a good way to grow your user base. I think specifically on corporate partnerships and procurement, it's a competitive and regulated environment. So the natural tendency is the businesses must go through the natural pecking order to compete, if I'm understanding the question correctly, Fred. But
well, I suppose my question is really around this vision that you have of this entrepreneur, this sole warrior. He's kind of like riding into the distance on a horse and he's trailblazing and so on. But the reality is not quite like that. You know, you look at all some of the greatest companies in the world, including Discovery and internationally, you know, Google and so on, that there's strong partnerships that are symbiotic, that have leaders that have different skills. And I was curious to know.
Okay, so in the context of almost like co-founder type.
The founders, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I misunderstood. Yes, absolutely. So I mean, there's a lot of statistics out there that say that if you've got a, you talk about diversity, if you've got a female co-founder, your odds of success are way greater, and your odds of financial return for your investors are way greater than if you had a same-sex co-founder. But certainly, I think.
Why is that? Just out of interest.
Well, it's again complementary skills. Yeah. You know, men are from Venus and women are from Mars. If I got my planets correct, but.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's just that perspective and that diversity and stylistic difference. Whether we like it or not, there are gender differences. And as a consequence, when that plays out in a business, you do get something rather unique. And then in terms of whether, you know, single founder versus multiple founders, certainly I think there's pros and cons, but your probability of success, and I think just the journey as a single founder is really lonely. It's super tough when you try to build a business and
Absolutely.
Inspire your team and lead and sell and do all the good things great
and
entrepreneurs
wear all the different
do.
Hats for sure.
Wear multiple hats, and I think it's extremely tough because you can't necessarily share your own angst with somebody.
The whole truth, right? I talk about that with my business partners. The whole truth. When you communicate externally, it's very difficult to be completely vulnerable and be completely truthful about every aspect of your business, because people don't want to hear that. But you have to communicate that, right? So I suppose that's great when you have a co-founder, because they're privy to all those gremlins and you know, the gory details of running a business, which every business goes through, right?
And it's tough to find that the chemistry works well.
Sure.
I think, as we touched on earlier, just around the life stage of business, it's very rare to find a founder or founders that can move through the business's life cycles throughout the life of the business.
From inception all the way to having a 10,000 person business.
Absolutely.
It's tough. Those are completely different realities, right?
And those are rare humans.
For sure.
You know, there's a lot. There's a book called, I think it's called The Founder's Mentality. I think Chris Zook wrote it. I hope I quoted that correctly. But he talks about exactly that and how not all founders can grow with a business. And that's also okay. It's a function of finding the right niche within your business and also knowing that it's okay to have someone succeed you.
Mm, for sure. It was Chris Zook, by the way. Just had a quick cursory look at Google.
Good. Thank you.
I want to quickly talk about, Catherine, the opportunities. And I mean, when you look at the endeavor, as you mentioned earlier, has touched upon 8,000 or so entrepreneurs, very few of them have actually got through to being that 1%. Mm. But I mean, what do you look for in terms of choosing and selecting the people that really are built for success?
Mm.
I'm saying people, but I mean, I suppose companies and businesses and structures, right? What are the various aspects that you look for?
So I think, again, it comes down to the timing. So from an endeavor standpoint, we're certainly looking for where the business is at in terms of its life cycle. We look for what we call the infliction point, which is typically when a business is either entering a new market, raising another venture round, so they would have already been self-funded to this point, or transitioning from like a traditional consultancy type model into a SaaS or an enterprise type model in the tech world. That's we term an inflection point. And the reason we look for that is because at that point, the business has a massive shift in its growth. And it's typically a 6 or 7 year old business.
Mm.
It's proven product market fit. So that's one key element. And then combined with, you know, the founding pairs. Sometimes there's multiple founders and across multiple geographies.
Like Jirka, right? Katlego and his crew were with Endeavor, right?
So. Correct, yes. And even if I think of somebody like Go One, where you've got multiple founders across the US, Australia, and South Africa, Malvin Kubeka. That combination of leaders in the team is really important because you want to know that they can actually, amongst themselves, really step up and scale themselves. And that often comes across in the mentorship engagement. We're looking for that, is that agility of that leadership team to really stretch and grow and really have those big ideas and want to execute on it. And then the last element, which is a key element, of course, is the business. Is there a big market? Because ultimately you can have all the other ingredients and the market isn't sizable enough.
Okay.
And ultimately, you want to be able to be sure that if you're going to stretch this business, that you can execute on a big market.
Sure.
And I think in the US, that's always a great example and why you can see these huge chunks of money being thrown at businesses, because they're looking at the US. And yes, one state in itself is a huge market.
Sure.
But all the states is a phenomenal market.
Gotcha. And I mean, if we look at the portfolio of companies that you have, is there a sector that's weighted? And more specifically, do you see any gaps in that, you know, our listeners could potentially look at and start to investigate?
This sounds like something I should monetize.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I think there's always friction. So, I mean, you think about education, you think about an example like Spark Schools.
Yes.
So there's a business that certainly has all the makings for something that could go international very quickly. But the need in South Africa really drives massive expansion just in the South African context.
Sure.
They're taking advantage in the case of a Spark of the fact that there's so much friction in the current system that if you can provide a blended learning model in an accessible way, without all the other constraints of transport, location, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you can really touch a lot of kids in a cost-effective manner.
Just for context, what is the Spark
Schools
model?
Oh, so Spark Schools, essentially what they've done is they've taken a tech platform, education platform,
yes,
and they offer blended learning. And so you can have a classroom-type learning environment where you're learning in a group and you can learn online, but you don't have to be connected in terms of fiber. You can be offline, but digital environment.
Okay, gotcha.
So both a traditional learning model and a tech learning model blended.
It can be deployed at scale across many different regions and areas.
Correct.
That could still be transplanted through Africa and
correct.
Beyond.
Correct.
Okay, so getting to the gaps.
The gaps.
Catherine,
so
let's
I think
let's
go back to it. I think, you know, there's huge needs in this market. So education is one of them. And there's huge amounts of disruption happening in the education environment to offer high quality learning at a low cost offering. And then again, financial services. It's an obvious one, but the reality is that there's an enormous amount of South Africa's population that have not been banked or do not have access to the basic financial services. And so if we can find ways to alleviate those frictions, of course it's difficult because it's highly regulated. And then the third and I would say obvious one is anything that's in a highly regulated market that is consumer facing. They're incredibly difficult models to crack, but because of the regulation means that you have to operate within certain boundaries, which means if you can crack it, you've got a natural moat, you've got a natural mechanism to differentiate yourself. So I don't think I've got a perfect answer for you, Fred, but
no,
I think those are the kind of natural categories.
It's helpful. I think what we're starting to see is there's just a beautiful opportunity for disruption here that's unique to us, right? Like, the maturity of, for example, our mobile sector and the proliferation of mobile phones and now the accessibility of smartphones that is becoming more and more accessible is really also, I would imagine, providing an amazing opportunity in various sectors across, you know, all different demographics and so on. And internationally, you're seeing things like, you know, in the insurance space, like Lemonade and so on, starting to really eat up market share. I would imagine through various different sectors, these young mobile opportunities I suppose companies that can act upon those opportunities to disrupt the status quo and the established businesses.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a natural tendency, just if you think about our own evolution, we're talking about the millennials and Generation Z. Ultimately, the consumer is changing and the consumer is empowered and they have a mobile phone in their hands. I mean, I'm telling the listeners what they already know. But the reality is now we've got to start thinking about how do you differentiate yourself when you're in someone's hands and they're bombarded with a whole lot of opportunity. What's going to make their user experience incredibly unique? And how are you going to get them to consume your product or service? Ultimately, that is going to be the way in which you reach your customer going forward. We have to figure out, as South Africans, how are we going to do that well? If we can do it well, we can probably transplant that into other markets that are emerging. And particularly given that our infrastructure is not fantastic.
And that provides such an interesting segue. I mean, we are confronted with so many threats in this environment whereby there's instability of, you know, electricity and access to Wi-Fi I suppose we have a set of challenges that are unique to us. How important is that a factor, in terms of growing your business, in terms of, I suppose, mitigating against those sort of threats?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely important. Reality is if you haven't thought through and done your homework on how often the lights are off, or at least put that into your financial model in some way. That is really going to
the business interruption
impact your
stuff.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I think of an example that I'm quite close to our own business precinct, where the assumption is you've got X feet within the business precinct and that the generator is running 24/7. Therefore, you can serve that customer their cups of tea or coffee. Well, the assumption there is that footfall is coming into the business park. And the reality is in today's economy, not everyone is coming into the business park. They're working remotely.
Yes.
And so doing your homework and actually really checking that you are getting that footfall, checking the register, you know, just doing those kind of basics, I think, can certainly mitigate the simplest risks. But I think in the more sophisticated online environments, it becomes critically important because you're making the assumption that your end user has got backup, has got power, has got generator, has got water, et cetera, the basic services in place. And if they don't, they're less likely to be able to use your product. So Yeah, I think it's critical, and having the right insurance there is I think something you need to give a lot of thought to.
And the different partnerships that you have, from insurance to, I guess, to, you know, tax and the financial input that you have, your investors and so on and so forth, to have all of those in place, that structure around you, right?
Yeah, and I think that's so going back to where your business life stage is at, where you're at in terms of your own company's development. Certainly at the early stage, that's where those incubators and accelerators are very useful, because they're providing all that foundational thinking and certainly network to you, to service providers that could be useful. So, for example, you get a lot of online accounting systems that mean you don't have to pay exorbitant amounts to have an accountant on call.
They kind of do everything, you know, like Xero and
exactly,
and these cloud-based
I'm sure they'll pay you for that, yes.
Which, yeah, well, for sure. But they, I mean, it's amazing, right?
Yeah, it just, absolutely.
It just makes it so much easier. It's plug and play, and there's all these ancillary benefits to having them because they're all integrated with each other.
Exactly.
You have, you know, all the cloud systems speaking to one another, you know, Squarespace with MailChimp and Google Suite and, you know, Xero with Receipt Bank and so on, so on, so on. There's all these different, you know, various and Simple Pay, exactly, that just integrate so naturally with each other, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where we're starting to see, with certainly within the financial services environment, as much as we love to give them a hard time, a lot of the new business banking offerings are catering for those needs, where they're offering a lot of those value-added services. You're not only getting your business account, but you're actually also getting your accountant and your leave and your pay slips, et cetera, all bundled into your banking offering. So I think, you know, doing your homework around where you can get a lot of those services and for free, I think really is smart, because you can set yourself up well so that as you scale, you've got all of your bookkeeping in place. It's critically important, because ultimately you're building the business that one day you're hoping either to exit or, you know, realize some value out of. If you haven't had your accounting correct from day one, you can't expect that on day 10 someone's going to pay for something that you say may or may not have hit your bank account.
Sure.
I mean, these are simplistic terms. I think the more sophisticated business environment, certainly having, you know, the right tax and advice around inter-country banking transfers, your exchange controls, etc., that is where your bookkeeping is critically important. You just can't be caught short if you haven't done your pricing correctly.
And I want to talk about, I mean, exiting a business, right? So I guess that's the entrepreneur's dream, is to be able to work. And, you know, you go through a particular, all the various life stages, and you get through this period of time. And at the end of it, you can exit for X 100 million rand, and, you know, you're golden for the rest of your life. What advice would you give to the one person operator, you know, the one who's designing websites, doing, you know, she's doing social media in her lounge, or creating fabrics for the industrial design company, or whatever it may be, you know, what kind of advice would you give to those single person operators?
I think ultimately it's trying to understand, are you doing it because it's a means, you know, to survival?
Like a lifestyle business.
Or are you doing it to build something that you would like to sell one day?
Okay.
Because fundamentally, those are two different things. If you're building something to sell it, or you want to pass it on in some way, whether it's monetary or leave it for the next generation, your foundational elements of your business need to be sound. So what I mean by that is you need to have a registered entity. It needs to have a bank account. It needs to have records. It doesn't necessarily have to have an audit, but it should at least have a financial review. Those business fundamentals are really important, because it demonstrates you've actually got an entity that is saleable. If you're artisanal and essentially whatever you earn, you spend.
Sure.
The reality is that that's very difficult to pass on, other than your knowledge of how you trade or how you know, thinking about buying and selling your goods. And so ultimately, if you're wanting to move from that artisanal environment into a saleable business, my sense is have conversations, or get into your local community accelerator and go and speak to those mentors or the people that are running the programs. because they can start helping you think about how you put that business construct in place.
And that's something you got to think about right from the beginning, right? I mean, if you name the company after yourself, for example, it's probably going to be a lot more tricky to sell it in 10 years' time because it's so heavily invested in your own personality and characteristics, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about different types of business profiles, I think, you know, the reality is every organization has their ways of categorizing. In Endeavor language, we talk about, you know, four different quadrants of business profiles. So you talk about somebody who's named the business after themselves. In Endeavor speak, we talk about the local star. So this is somebody who naturally has super charismatic leader, very fanatical, has a huge following, embodies the brand. And the reality is for them to pass that on is really difficult, as you point out, because their name is inextricably linked to the business.
Sure.
And often the guidance there is think about how you're going to succeed in terms of who's going to succeed you in the business. Who you're gonna, what kind of management team do you need in place to, you know, instill that culture and passion? Is there going to be a different brand?
Sure.
When is that going to happen? And is this just going to be a local business? Because it's quite difficult to internationalize a brand.
Sure.
It's super competitive.
And sometimes it's okay, right? Again, it's a decision that you make, and it depends on what you aspire to down there.
Yeah, I think of an example of USN. You know, they're part of the Endeavor Network.
Sure.
And
it's an amazingly successful business.
Very successful and certainly a brand that we may have seen. We may not necessarily use the product, but you're aware of the brand.
Sure.
And what's super interesting there is when you think about Albi as the founder, he didn't name the business after himself. He just saw that there was a really interesting play on the name where if you with the right colors and the right branding could be interpreted as American, but actually talk to sports nutrition and being the ultimate sports product.
Yes.
And it was such an interesting, I mean, he shared a lot of his story with us, but such an interesting way of building a business and really, I mean, he lives and he's a brand ambassador for his own product, but certainly the business has succeeded in moving into international markets. He's operating now. I mean, if you look at most of Amazon's sports product sales in the UK, USN's like number one by country mile.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. And so I think going back to where we started this conversation, which is trying to find mentors that have done that. It's looking, if you were starting out with a brand or a product, is finding brands or products that you think you would like your brand or product to emulate. And let's find those individuals to try and mentor you or at least spend time with you to think around how you build your business.
Sure. I guess there would be the difference between like an LB or potentially like a Richard Branson, you know, who's created Virgin, but it's so the cultures and the values mirror as opposed to are inextricably linked to Richard Branson, right? Or, you know, take someone like Trevor Noah, who's creating a business out of his own personal brand. That's going to be really tough to sell. But I suppose it's the intention right from the start.
Yeah, I think there's a great story of Vuyo's. And,
You
know, Miles talks
restaurant.
About he did some guerrilla marketing of his own when he recognized one of the big beverage players had launched Vuyo's and Vuyo's dream. And he then recognized the opportunity to launch a business called Vuyo's. And he always used to chuckle because how many people introduced themselves to him and said, "Hey, Vuyo, how's it going?"
Yeah.
But a great example of somebody who's been able to separate their own name from a brand. And I think that is, like all things, we've got blind spots. I think the tendency when you start naming yourself your business after yourself is exactly that. How does somebody take that business on and operate it under your name?
You mentioned there were four different segments. So we've spoken about the first quadrant. Can we talk to the other three?
Yeah, sure. So again, using some of the Endeavor language, we talk about the transformer. The transformer is something that as South Africans, we're very familiar with. The more traditional type of businesses. So these are your big services businesses or manufacturing type businesses. And why I say more traditional is they haven't yet been fully disrupted by technology. And those businesses typically rely very heavily on a strong management team. So if you want to see that business scale and grow, firstly, you need to be in a great market. You need a sizable market to execute on. Typically, because you've been operating for some time, you've got that first mover advantage. The key is, have you got the management team that's now going to take this business forward and execute on the growth? Because the reality is what you did yesterday is not going to be what you need to do tomorrow to keep your dominant position in the market. And so So in these traditional type businesses, and you would see these in your typical franchises, they have to spend an enormous amount of capital scaling and a huge amount of capital branding and marketing. And most of your competitors are going to have a digital advantage.
Gotcha.
So it's very costly to change, but quite critical to start making some of those business changes to be able to adapt for what's needed in the future. Then the third quadrant would be what we would call a rocket ship. So these are your traditional internet type businesses, and we see a lot of them. Your e-commerce platform would be considered to be a more traditional type business these days in terms of a rocket ship.
Do you have an example of a rocket ship in today's terms? I mean, and
yeah,
a company,
I think
a real...
so you would think of somebody like a Y Group, for example.
Gotcha. Just massively fast growing.
Very fast growing, disruptive. And you know, when they were first launched, quite unique in the you know, kind of payments and rewarding environment. That's less unique today. So being essentially keeping up, keeping innovating, making sure you're streamlined and cost effective,
gotcha,
quite tough. And so again, the skills that you need in the team and the depth in the management team is super important there. And your route to market. Because ultimately, it's an enterprise type sale in the rocket ship persona. So figuring out who's your next target, how you're going to sell to them, and can the team really execute on that exponential growth? Fourth quadrant. So this is what we'd call as a diamond. So diamond, they're very rare.
These are the guys that Endeavor seeks out.
They're very, very rare. I think the reality is yet we haven't found a diamond in South Africa that has done something so unique that it's changed world behavior.
Sure.
So if you think about where a Facebook or an Uber were, you know, in their infancy, or Airbnb, they fundamentally changed the behavior of users. We have a few South Africans that are changing human behavior globally, but they haven't stayed in South Africa. So I think that's...
We're claiming Elon.
Exactly. So we'd like more Elons, but to stay in South Africa,
sure,
and build diamonds.
Gotcha. Last word in terms of advice for the burgeoning diamonds in the listenership listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I think all of these things, it's a case of really understanding where you fit in your own life stage, your own business persona, and then trying as best as you can to seek out the information that's going to confirm your blind spots. Our natural tendency is to look for the affirmations, to say we're doing a good job. But being aware of those blind spots is super important because it does future-proof your business. And you've got absolutely everything to lose by not being aware of them, and everything to gain by being aware of them, because once you're aware of them, you can act on them. So I think, you know, being aware, seeking that advice, and certainly seeking the accelerator or the growth support organization out there to help you navigate some of the challenges your business may have.
That's great advice. Thank you, Catherine. And thank you for your time, and congratulations on all the success that Endeavor has achieved over the past while in South Africa. And hopefully we can transplant some of that success to the greater ecosystem, the greater entrepreneurial ecosystem. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Healthy Business Show. If you love this podcast, do let us know via social media. Tag @discovery_SA. Use the hashtag DSY Healthy Business, and please do rate us on your favorite podcast platform. Whether it's Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your shows, you can also find more episodes on the Discovery website at discovery.co.za/corporate/podcasts.